Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to The Podyssey. We're back in the studio, chaps. We're back in the studio after last month's frankly horrendous horrendous experience of trying to do this. I don't think online meetings will ever catch on, to be honest with you. Nice to see you all. How's everyone been?
Good.
Pretty well.
Chilling.
Yeah. Pretty good, thank you.
I'm delighted to be back. I've been absolutely sideswiped with flu for the last 2 weeks. So you are amongst the first adults I've seen for a little while.
I feel honoured.
So yeah, if I cough, I'll turn the microphone down. Don't worry, at home you can't catch it. You three can, so that's just unlucky. Okay, so what's been going on at the Odyssey since we last spoke?
Yeah, been doing good. Award season's been kind of kicking into effect, so we're getting a lot of the films that have been nominated for BAFTAs and Oscars. I don't know which ones you guys have seen, but I saw A Real Pain recently, which I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Just a really fantastically written and performed, particularly, film by Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin. I think you mentioned it on the last podcast, Nick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Just really good mixture of drama and comedy. I don't know if you've seen it yet, Sam, or
not. Not yet. No, I really want to. It looks so good.
I do highly recommend it. Yeah, very, very truthful, I think is the word, but also very funny in the way it does it. Mm. So, yeah.
Sam, what have you seen?
I've seen The Brutalist, which we haven't got on just yet. We've got on, I think, in 2 weeks or so, towards the end of the month. Yes, I saw that at the BFI, and I really loved it. You're looking at me with a very sceptical face, but
just,
it is really great.
Okay, so sell me The Brutalist, because I just hate the sound of this. It sounds like nobody making it had any fun. Nothing fun happens in the film. It's about 7 hours long, and it's about a bloke who does some architecture. You're going to have to convince me on this one.
Okay. I'm trying to think of a good way to pitch it. The first hurdle is it is 3.5 hours long. So that will put people off, inevitably. I mean, 15 minutes, that is the interval in the middle. So you can shave that off. So it's 3 hours 15, and so that helps. I do think, for me, I found that the interval really helps the experience of watching the film, and it also makes it feel a lot shorter than it is. And also, the film doesn't feel very long at all. I found that, for me, it like raced past the whole time, interval or not, because the story moves pretty quickly, and it's covering a really big period of the main character's life. So it follows an architect called Laszlo Toth, who's played by Adrian Brody, who's absolutely terrific in the film. It's one of the best performances I've seen in a long, long time. I think we'll talk about the Oscars in a bit, but I think he should win the Oscar for that. 100%. I know, yeah, bold take maybe. Fun probably isn't the right word to describe the film at all, but it is very moving and very powerful, and it definitely, I was really struck by it, and I still feel like I'm thinking about it now, even though I saw it maybe 2 weeks ago. So Laszlo Toth, he's come over from Hungary to America, having survived the Holocaust, and he's kind of all alone with very little family and people that he knows, and he's kind of trying to grapple with the immigrant experience, and trying to pursue his idea of the American dream, and kind of getting swept up in that, as people start to realize that he was this very famous architect and very accomplished architect back home. Without any more spoilers.
Is that before you know? Do you want to see it even more now?
That helps at all?
Maybe. Let's have a look. I mean, is Jason Statham in it at all? Or?
I'm afraid not. Yeah, I wish he was. That would be great to be fair.
They couldn't get him.
That would be a good camera.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
It does sound like a Jason Statham movie, though, doesn't it?
The Brutalist. Yeah, it does.
It does, yeah.
Well, like, I mean, architecture Obviously not the same thing, but the next Jason Statham film is called A Working Man, and he's on a construction site. Yeah. So like
now we're talking.
Adrian Brody does the architecture, and then Jason Statham makes the buildings, and then kicks a few people in the face.
It's practically a sequel.
Yeah. pretty much.
All right, good stuff, Sam. So Nick, anything you've seen?
I saw Maria yesterday, as the time of this recording, and just thoroughly impressed with the film. This is the biopic of Maria Callas, who's a very acclaimed Greek opera singer, and the director is Pablo Larraín, and he's done a multitude of female strong sort of biopics that concern these sort of tragic lives of these women. So you've had Spencer, which was about Princess Diana, and you've had Jackie Kennedy. There's one else in the between that I just keep forgetting about, but this one, Maria, was just excellent. I was thoroughly impressed. It was quite a busy screening. I didn't know much about the story or the life of the opera singer, except of course the songs, and the songs are just as impressive as the whole film was to me, which was just like beautifully shot, great performances. Angelina Jolie returned. I think the last thing I saw her in was Marvel's Eternals.
Oh, yeah.
As well, so that's such a great thing to see her back at her like superstar stasis. Like, she's to me put in a performance that regards her as like one of the finest actresses of my generation. Like, she just is the part, and she trained so well. She'd actually found out through the training for the movie that she has a soprano voice, and so there were parts where she was singing Maria Callas, and it was her versus archival audio from her Maria's previous performances. I'm just overly impressed, surprised in a good way, and I do implore a lot of people to watch it. I think we've got a couple more performances coming up, one in March, I believe, but try and check it out if you can.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, chaps. So I tell you what, we'll take a quick break. I'm going to run outside and have a massive coughing fit. And then when I come back, because it's February, we're going to talk about romance in films and some of the best ones. Not necessarily romantic comedies, because you kind of think the two are together, but romance in films. So we'll be back in a second with that. Welcome back to part two of the Podyssey, where we've dimmed the lights, we put the flowers out, we've lit some candles from Zara, because we are talking all things romance in films, because it's February and it's nearly around Valentine's Day. So chaps, I know you've come with some lists, but first of all, I want to say, when I was thinking about this, your mind obviously goes to romantic comedies, because like the two words are almost jammed together. Mm-hmm. I enjoy those quite a lot. I don't always find them that romantic, because it's kind of two good-looking people circling around each other. One of them does a big gesture at the end and they kind of win. You have to actually look quite hard to find proper romance in films, I think. Mm. And weirdly, I think TV does it better. You know, like, so in British TV, you've got very understated things like Tim and Dawn saving each other in the office, or the kind of background characters in Gavin and Stacey. I find that more romantic than I do the kind of big Hollywood gestures, so I kind of struggle with this. So what are your thoughts on that?
I agree. I wouldn't necessarily say it. TV does it better as a medium, but I definitely think that what you're saying, I wholeheartedly agree with, where it doesn't need a gesture to be a showcase of love. It's the small things that really count in relationship. I'm not even I'm gonna back this up by saying I'm not in a relationship, but I have close relationships with like friends, family, where I know where small things and small like little bits of like love languages and things like that always sort of are more showcasing to a really like fruitful relationship than big gestures like I'm gonna get 30,000 roses for you or something. Just to me, it seems like it's more real in a film way that you're showing that, like, or TV way that you're showing these little, like, for instance, like, if you're saying Gavin and Stacey, like Nessa and Spiffy obviously have this sort of like unspoken love, which is just I suppose that's for good writing, but it works for everyone because that's the sort of thing we know. It's like a real love that people probably see here and there more often than people getting on down on one knee in a group of like circling dancers or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As much as that can happen, it's more likely you're going to get an Essa and Smithy story than a sort of, you know, like Gone with the Wind or like sweeping romantic gesture than most people get. I don't know, Barry. How about you guys?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think we were talking on the way about like whether we even put like as like platonic romance as well. I mentioned to you like Lost in Translation by Sofia Coppola, where Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson aren't. It's not that they're attracted to each other; it's that they kind of form this really close bond because of the isolation they're both in at the moment. And like whether that could be a romance film, because I think that is a really great film as well. But then, yeah, what you were saying about like we were saying as well, like a lot of the romance, particularly I was looking at a lot of the romance films I like, it's actually quite tragic a lot of the time, or like there's the film's more about why certain people can't be together as opposed to
and that's like, why it's great.
Yeah, so like In the Mood for Love, for example, which is a really fantastic film, but is it's pretty tragic. But like, yeah, and then I think also it's great when there is a film that can really bring you into a romance and kind of make you see why it works and what's so great about it. And there's plenty of those within the world of films. But yeah, I think rom-coms dominate us a bit because they're what are pushing our faces. And what I was going to say is like when you were talking about like, oh, and there's lots of two attractive people running around. One of the caveats I find with rom-coms is like oftentimes a lot of them, if you look kind of actually at what they're doing, a lot of the time, it's not very nice people in rom-coms. Yeah. Like, I guess it's to like add to the comedy element, but you're actually like this person.
When you think about it.
Yeah. I don't know. So, what do you think?
I think that formula of like you were saying, Neil, of the rom-com genre, is so tried and tested at this point that it's like now, the characters are sometimes so wacky, just because they need some kind of original spin on it. To make it somewhat different from the last.
Yeah, and they'll have someone who's like, they're kind of, nominally, they're like an uptight CEO or something. But actually, they're always falling over in meetings, making a complete G for themselves. Like, none of it rings true. You have to suspend all your belief.
Yeah, it doesn't really all gel well together.
But they are fun.
They are fun, yeah. I've watched one yesterday, now that I think about it, that I didn't even think of as a romance film when I was watching it, but it really is, called Hitman, which is the latest Richard Linklater film. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, we need to watch this.
It's honestly so good. I really, really had a good time with it. It's Glenn Powell, who's just kind of dominating all of cinema.
I enjoyed this. At the moment. He's busy.
He's real busy. Yeah. He wrote that film as well. Co-wrote the film.
Really?
Yeah. I know. I don't know how he's got time to do all this stuff. But yeah, it's great. So he's kind of playing this college professor who part-time dresses up as would-be hitmen for people who want to like get people murdered, and then gets them arrested, and then he kind of falls in love with one of the people he's trying to set up. It's just great, and that was a really good spin on it. And then I was like, you know, for them, really, it's all fairly tropey rom-com stuff. But it does it in a way that it's really enjoyable and really good fun.
If so it's wacky, you can sort of laugh at it. And I suppose that's why romantic comedy is so popular. It's just to make you laugh and fucking
give you something sweet.
And it knows what it is, which I think is why they get away with it for the most part, because they're not trying to be, you know, the best thing of all time or trying to...
Not trying to nick the Oscar from the root of this.
No. And they don't need to, because there's an audience for that. And, you know, there's great comfort in just watching a nice film where you know that it's going to be kind of nice for them at the end. Not that that's necessarily the kind of films we're going to be talking about now.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. Nick, let's start with you. What sort of films are we going to be talking about? You've come armed with a few choice selections.
Yeah, I have got... I've got five, you know. That's the lucky number here. So at number five, I suppose it's no particular order, but I was just saying, number five, God's Own Country, 2017.
Oh, nice. I haven't seen that.
Josh O'Connor, right?
Josh O'Connor, and he's also co-starring with Alec, I'm going to butcher this name, Sekaranu. Basically, Josh plays, Josh O'Connor, sorry, plays a farmer called Johnny. He's sort of like taking over this role that his father used to do. He's a bit debilitated. Someone comes onto the farm to sort of help with the workload, and they begin to get into a relationship. It's a bit tumultuous one. It's quite fierce. It's quite raw, but really tender. Like, the film itself presents in such a like a really light, cloudy grey sort of palette and memento going through it. But the two leads sort of, they don't want to work together, but they just gel in that sort of like rough and raw sort of way that it can be like, because they don't really like each other, but then they sort of begin to fight and have those words, and it becomes really passionate between them. And in the end, I mean I'm not really spoilers, I suppose.
I think spoilers are allowed. Yeah.
There's been a warning. There's a warning.
Okay, spoilers. You don't want to hear out. Give it like a minute. They don't end up together because the relationship is just too tumultuous and hard for them to actually realise what they want is what they actually want, like, separately. Like, they don't want to be together because they actually are better without each other. Which is a funny way to look at it, I suppose, in the way of, if you love each other, you sort of, the norm is, you sort of, you try, but sometimes, you know, if you love someone, you got to, like, leave them, which is sad. But that's just the
all
things,
right.
Isn't it?
Good choice. What's next?
Next, I've got quite a cheesy choice. You've got Mail, 1998.
You need to watch
yeah.
this.
Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan.
Love him.
Yeah,
love it.
They're both like bookstore owners. Meg Ryan owns an independent one, whereas Tom Hanks owns a sort of chain Borders-like-esque shop. And the funny thing about it, and why I like it, it's just like such an early internet age.
Oh my god, yeah, thing. Like when they get mail
chat rooms,
and the mail kind of like, yeah. Bing, they make a big deal of every email.
Of course, where you got the title come from is the guy always pops up, it's like, you've got mail. it's just a really funny film as well. I think it's just, and also just you go along with that whole like,
because isn't Tom Hanks's. He's actually, obviously, he's lovely in it because he's Tom Hanks, but he's from the kind of baddies who are trying to buy her out.
So when, on the chat room, they're sort of anonymous to each other because they've just got usernames. But they're actually like rivals in real life, and they don't know, of course, that they are talking to each other. So they become friends through an online chat room, through the, you know, the spectre of like anonymity, then versus actually them in real life becoming quite like enemies towards each other. And of course, you know, the film moves on, things change, and it's just a really sweet put together film. I think it's, you know, it's a quick one. It's one of those ones. It's like a Sunday night film. If you've got like a blanket and a cup of tea, you know, Bob's your uncle. You'll be very happy with that.
Yeah, great choice. Great choice.
Number three, I've got The Shape of Water. I'd say I'd watch it at least once a year. I'd say.
Really?
Yeah. Just because. It's just really, again, sweet, but like bittersweet in a way where, you know, Sally Hawkins plays this, is she mute girl? She like, because she's been scarred through her, like through an accident at the beginning of her life, and makes her, I don't know if it's deaf or mute, but I think it is mute because she can't talk. Anyway, besides that, she basically falls in love with an amphibious creature in this like government protected building where she works as a janitor, and it's just like, it's also like a love through, like, I don't know the right word for it, but their scars, like their both of their scars is what actually like makes them sort of like bond, and like knowingly that they are cast off against the real world, that they come together and like form a bond and become lovable for that, like, and the fact that obviously it's like a fable like creature, I think is just a great thing anyway, because I love the sort of like anti-love, like no one's really gonna fall in love with a fish creature, but it's out there, like, and someone's made that story, and it works really well because it's just like, also the cinema scope around it, like the lighting is great, the performances are great. Richard Jenkins pulls in a really good performance as well. Like, he doesn't need to be like necessarily, but he's like the next door neighbor looking after character of Eliza, played by Sally Hawkins.
It's a really good film. Oscar winner.
Best film?
I think, yeah.
Oscar winner. Yeah. I believe so, yeah. Guillermo del Toro directed as well, and I'm a big fan of his.
And it's kind of done in a sort of like, it's a bit kind of 1960s sci-fi, so the kind of guards walk around in like hazmats and like to get into the facility, so you have to go under a big airlock.
Say he's like, if the creature is sort of like Creature of the Black Lagoon, it's like that, but mixed with a romantic, like, comedy-esque capture in there. It's just a great movie overall. If you've not seen it, it's also award-winning film, and it's really lovely. The second film, or number two, I don't know if anyone's heard of this, Nick Nora's Infinite Playlist.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it. Is it Michael Cera?
Michael
right?
Cera's in here. Kat Dennings plays the female lead. Nora, obviously, come out in 2008. It's just a really simple, slightly ironic, like, romance film, because in the beginning they're not together, and then they just sort of like, can you be my boyfriend for a minute? Okay, and then it just happens, like, you know, this, like, that's how it happens. And it, I remember watching this when it came out, and I had turned 16 when this came out, and it was like the start of my indie music foray of I listen to alternative music now. So but like I'd also say like this has got like Vampire Weekend and like Band of Horses and things like all these like indie bands on the the album track, which I loved at the time. But yeah, it's just basically they travel through New York in an evening, trying to look for like her mate's drunken friend, and just all these little like night of mishaps that everything goes a bit owry, so it's just everyone's like following each other and like running after each other. It's like a romantic version of like Scooby-Doo, where everyone's just like chased, everyone just being chased around and stuff like that. But it's a great movie. But I mean, Michael Cera, is he lovable? I don't know.
Yes.
Number one.
I've got him on my list
as
well.
Oh, I know what that's
going
to be.
Number one, I think, like, number one defo, like, romantic movie of all time. I'm sure I could be swayed otherwise, but Moulin Rouge, I think, is a great, great film from 2001, directed by Baz Luhrmann, starring Nicole Kidman as Satine and Ewan McGregor as Christian. Very musically led film, of course, like a jukebox musical, with a few, I think it was like one original song in there, but it's really, I suppose it's a guilty pleasure in a way, because it's very promiscuous, and their love is really not meant to happen, but it's just thrown at you the way it's like the film is anyway. It's such a party that you want things to go well, and it plays with your emotional heartstrings, because there's like a play within a play as well, and everything that's in the play describes sort of the outer rim of the movie itself. And the performances are really sweet. Like, I fell in love with Ewan McGregor watching this, and I fell in love with Nicole Kidman watching this. Even Jim Broadbent, who plays Harold Ziedler, he's actually really cool in it, and as even when he talks his way through like a virgin, it's just funny and silly and wits, like ditzy, and everything I love about life itself. It's just a crazy ride. And also music, like if someone was serenading me with music, I'd fall in love with them instantly. So I think that's why, that's also part of why I love the movie itself. It's just the romance, like the love and the romance that flows through their artistic daily lives.
Excellent list. Very good, Nick. Very good. Right, Roberto, no pressure.
That was a really, like, you know, you that was a very personal and like very you eloquently spoke about all the films and how deep a lot of them were. And now I'm just gonna come in and this is a slightly alternative list, because I looked up.
They've all got Matthew McConaughey in them.
Right. Yeah, he was the king of the rom-com for a while. He was just churning those out. What was it? I can't remember.
It was How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I heard that's a kind of cult classic. But either way, anyway, so I was talking about how, like, I looked up films that I, romance films I liked, and a lot of them were, like, actually quite tragic. So I've kind of tried to go for, like, not tragic, but also not exactly, like, you know, all peachy and roses, I guess. And, you know, I talked about rom-coms and how they're kind of over the top and have really terrible characters. So my first pick is Scott Pilgrim versus the World, yeah. Which is very over the top to the point of basically being one of the most direct translations of comic to screen. And it also has many terrible people in, one of which is Scott Pilgrim. I bring that up because I think it is what dominates the conversation of the film nowadays, is that Scott Pilgrim really is not a very good guy. It's kind of inherently weird to see such a kind of, like, selfish, arrogant person then also doing, like, martial arts and fighting all of these evil exes, as it were. Mm-hmm. But I think that's like the point of the film is, like, how he has so, like, little kind of respect for himself that it kind of, like, extends to how he treats other people. But I think it does really handle the romance between Scott and Ramona well in that there's always, like, kind of these scars from relationships, and they always kind of affect your other relationships, but then it's all about, like, kind of moving past that and kind of coming together to be better people together. But, like, and then that's just ignoring all of the great things about it. Like, you know, it's the most quotable film ever. I literally watched it on New Year's Eve just out of happenstance, and I was trying not to, like, quote it to my family, like, the entire time. And then also just, like, fantastic cast. Lots of people who would go on to be very famous. Chris Evans is in it for a bit. Brie Larson.
Aubrey Plaza is in there.
Plaza's in there. Anna Kendrick. Yeah, just, like, so true, yeah. All rocking about giving it their all in this very silly film. But, yeah, I do really like Scott Pilgrim. So action romance there.
Good one. Good one.
Kind of also, I guess, well, not really action, but a kind of crime sort of film. I actually watched this last week. I thought I'd throw it on because it was just pure entertainment in the best way, and it's Bound by the Wachowskis. It was the first film they did, and literally the film they did right before they did The Matrix. Cool. It was like 1996 or 7, I think. And it's about, it stars Gina Gerson and Jennifer Tilly as these two women, Corky and Violet, and Violet is married to a mobster, played amazingly by Joe Pantoliano, who I'll get to in a minute. But they essentially fall in love because the mobster guy isn't very good, as you can imagine, and they essentially scheme to kind of steal from the mob and in the process drive Joe Pantoliano's character insane throughout the film. It's this really cool, like, mixture of crime, romance, and, like, it would be a thriller if you weren't delighting in how these mobsters just get completely just done over by these two ladies, just like taking all their money and just the infighting that happens because they can't comprehend that they would have been, like, just stolen by, like, the neighbor next door. It's really funny, really well directed. If you like the Wachowskis kind of visual style, it's very much a progenitor of that. Lots of really cool shots and a really good, and at the heart of it, the romance is really good because you kind of really understand why Violet doesn't want to be in a relationship, and you understand why Corky wants to, why they want to kind of essentially run away from all of these very terrible men. So I'd say I haven't seen Thelma and Louise, but from what I understand, like, that film is kind of, it's not very explicit that Thelma and Louise are very much, like, in love with each other, but in this it's like, no, these girls love each other, let's do these men over and jog on.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's on Prime if you want to watch it. Yeah, it's very above all else, very entertaining. So, highly recommend that. I was gonna put The Handmaiden on here for a minute.
Oh yeah,
by Park Chan Wook.
I've never seen this. This looks mad.
Who directed Old Boy? So a romance film from the guy who did Old Boy, as you can imagine, is not going to be your typical romance film. I thought about The Handmaiden because it is actually very romantic. I think. have you seen it? I think it is.
Don't have fish before you have it.
Yeah, but, like, I was like, actually, I guess there's a lot, they have to, like, fight through a lot of distressing stuff to achieve the romance. So I've actually gone with another film by him, which is a lot less known, called I'm a Cyborg and That's Okay. And this is a film about a girl who believes very strongly that she is a cyborg and is thus put into a psychiatric ward, and it's actually a romance between her and another patient in there. So it's all through the perspective of these two patients in this psychiatric ward. Yeah. And that's very sweet in itself, in that it is just purely a romance between them. And there's no, like, the film doesn't, the film really, like, humanizes them, and it just kind of goes along with it, and nothing's made of it. It's just, this is the romance between them. Obviously they have their issues, both like have trauma and stuff, mm-hmm. but the film really treats it very well, and the word would be quirky, I guess. There's lots of, if you've seen like Old Boy, The Handmaiden, there's like lots of like overt visual metaphors about stuff. Like, for example, she believes she's a cyborg, when the staff of the hospital like enrage her, she like goes out and stretches her fingers out, and like her fingertips fall off, and there are like guns there, and she like shoots all of them. But then obviously that isn't actually happening. But you see it like explicitly, that like these staff are getting like, yeah. Then it cuts back to like this scene between the two leads, and it's like very sweet and wholesome, and how he like tries to help her get through stuff, and she tries to help him. Very nice, very like underrated Korean film by Park Chan-wook.
Yeah, good one. Two good great. Ones so far, Roberto. What you got next?
So the next one, you mentioned a film called You've Got Mail, which I haven't seen, but a friend told me, is the song Dreams by the Cranberries in that film? Do you remember?
I don't know if it is or not.
Someone told me that song is in it, but it's also a cover of it by Fei Wong, which that cover would have to be, this might be completely wrong, but I just remember the link there.
Sure, you go ahead.
But that cover would be from a film called Chungking Express, which you might have heard of. It's a bit of a, like, one of those beloved, like, kind of foreign films, also directed by Wong Kar-wai, who I mentioned, who did In the Mood for Love. But Chungking Express is interesting because it's not an anthology film, but it's two separate stories. And the first one is only like 25 minutes long, and then the rest of it is like the other one. So it's a bit like weird in that way. But the first story often gets forgotten about because the second story is so iconic. But the first story is also very good. It's like this policeman falling in love with this criminal woman who wears like a blonde wig, kind of like looking like Gina Rowlands. And it's just them kind of like both being very sad and kind of getting to know each other. Mm. It is good as well. But then the meat and potatoes of the film is this other police officer who frequents a kebab shop where Fei Wong works. And through some circumstance I can't quite remember, the kebab shop gets like his spare key because he like leaves it there for, I think, his ex-girlfriend, which plays into the whole story. Mm-hmm. And because he's very sad, Fei Wong takes it upon herself to essentially go into his house when he's not there and like clean it up, which I know sounds slightly strange, but it kind of works as this metaphor for her like kind of helping him through like the heartbreak of his previous relationship. And there's a bar of soap that's like really thin when he's just like living on his own, mm-hmm. and then she goes and replaces it with a big one, and he looks at it and he's like he's like talking to the bar of soap, he's like, what happened, how did you gain so much weight so quickly? Like, and he's like talking to like objects, he's talked to a Garfield like plush in his house like it's like one of his friends or something. I don't know why, it's just this very, very wholesome romance like burgeons out of it, and there's some of that like melancholy that Wong Kar-wai is very known for, but in the end it's just this very like wholesome, like it's kind of a rom-com, I guess, but done in a very like guerrilla fashion. It was shot in like a week or something, a few weeks. I mean, did it like in between another film.
Pretty sure we've shown that at The Odyssey before.
I think we have, yeah. And I do really recommend it. And you can't really go wrong. It's kind of seen as like an arts house film, but it really isn't. It's just kind of like a chill story. So I really recommend that. And then my final one, which I had to bring up because it is a rom-com, but it's my favorite rom-com. I'm going to tell you why. And it was on Netflix for like 5 years and it just got taken off, which is really annoying. So you have to like seek it out some other way. It's called Don't Go Break My Heart. Mm-hmm. It's also a Hong Kong film. It's directed by a guy called Johnny To, who's done... He's mainly known for, like, crime films, but then sometimes he'll go, like, romance film. Here we go. Romance comedy. It stars Louis Koo, who, just a random weird fact, is the executive producer of Mitchells vs. the Machines.
Whoa,
and the
cool.
Garfield
what?
Film that came out last year.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know why. I can't figure out why, but that's. I think he has a studio, maybe.
A Sony thing.
And then it's a lady called Gao Yuan, and then Daniel Wu, who was in Tomb Raider, the Alicia Vikander one. Nice. And this is a film that takes place during the 2008 financial crash, or at least that's part of the plot.
That's part of the romance.
It's basically about this very wealthy man, played by Louis Koo, who is like a textbook chauvinist, who in his skyscraper begins like a kind of romance with this lady through like post-it notes. But she discovers pretty quickly he's a textbook chauvinist and kind of wants nothing to do with him. But then he manipulates a situation where he becomes her boss. And again, that's like a very typical rom-com thing. But like, a lot of time is spent showing like, no, this guy is pretty terrible. And like, every attempt to reject this guy is like, okay, because he sucks. And then there's a love triangle element thrown in. And like, it's essentially about Louis Koo's character really trying to better himself, to actually realizing this is the woman he loves and wants to show this. But he has to like go through so many hurdles. Mm-hmm. But there's a part of this film, I've watched this with many people because you have to see this film. Mm-hmm. There's this, I can't spoil it, but there's this character introduced in this film. You'll know what I mean when you see it. When you see this character, you're like, oh, awesome. There's a part of the film where there's a fight happening. And there's a shot of something happening. And when I watched it with my friends the first time over Discord, we all screamed at the same time when the shot happened. We literally screamed in terror. And every other person I've shown it to has also done the same. Because this character is set up so well outside of like this relationship that's happening. And when this thing happens, you're like, no! And like, it really plays into like the whole romance of it, because it just shows like it is truly the little things that matter in life. Mm-hmm. And when that is compromised for chauvinism, masculinity, throwing your ego in, it all goes out the window. Mm-hmm. There's no going back after that.
No.
That so if you see Don't Go Breaking My Heart on Netflix, I highly recommend it, because it is the best rom-com I've ever seen. I say that.
Great list, Roberto. Great list.
the most alternative romance films list, I think.
Yeah, no, good effort. I like that.
Yeah.
Sam, we'll come on to yours. We've got a bit less time. These boys have given us a very hefty dose, so we'll go through yours a bit more quickly, but let's have a listen to yours.
All right, yeah, mine perhaps a bit more conventional in some respects. I'll start with a big British classic, which is Bridget Jones's Diary.
Yes, please.
Which I actually hadn't seen until like this last Christmas, and all my family were very shocked about that. But I really did enjoy it. It is really great. I can see why it's such a classic and why people love it, and why there's still more of them coming out all the time. Mm-hmm. It's very charming, and Renée Zellweger plays the character so well. And there's a lot of very of their time jokes and things going on in that film, which in a way adds to the comedy, but also is a bit uncomfortable to watch now, I suppose.
It's part of UK culture, though.
It's just the culture, yeah, and it's just a reflection of the time, I suppose. So it's an interesting cultural artefact.
Also, I should say, I'm old enough to remember when that very first came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain now how big it was. So there was a book by Helen Fielding, Bridget Jones' Diary, which just the whole world bought. Mm. Almost think, you know, Harry Potter levels of everybody's reading this thing. And then it's like, right, it's getting made into a film. And then there's kind of this massive, well, how can you make it into a film? Who's going to play it? What? It's going to be in America? I don't believe this. So there's quite a lot of heat on Renée Zellweger. Excuse me. But fantastic film. Absolutely fantastic.
I didn't know she was American until like the other day. Or like, crazy, I didn't clock it in my brain.
Such a good accent.
Yeah, I was like, what?
It's very impressive, yeah. And also to say, we have got the new one coming out quite soon, and we'll have that coming to the Odyssey in the first few weeks of March. So, yeah, look out for that.
Nice plug.
Yeah, big plug for that. Next, I've got La La Land, which is
great film.
An I thought about this as well.
And they also don't get together.
They don't get together. Yeah, it's one of those spoilers. The La La Land. Yeah, it's a real. It's interesting because I wouldn't say it's a tragedy at the end, but it's. I guess the film ultimately comes to be about having to make a choice between a relationship or your career or your goals, and how you can kind of come to terms with that and still be happy. And I guess the thesis of the film on that basis is that there's not necessarily one person out there for you in the world, and there's lots of people that you can have a great life with. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of deconstructing the notion that lots of mainstream rom-coms present, which is one true love, and when you find your person, you're with them for life, and all that kind of thing. So it's, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's, yeah. it's a very realistic relationship, given the kind of magic Hollywood treatment. Mm. Like, these two really glamorous, mm-hmm. kind of good-looking people sort of annoy each other a bit and maybe shouldn't go out for too long. So, yeah, great film.
And they're both struggling a lot throughout the film, both pursuing their kind of creative endeavours, and that kind of, that's kind of what binds them together to one degree, but also is ultimately the thing that tears them apart. Yeah, it's just a great, great, great film. Yeah, and I can rewatch it endlessly. Yeah. It's always on at Christmas, and I always end up watching it.
Very good.
The next one I've got is kind of an odd choice. It's like we were talking about earlier, where there's some romance, well, the platonic side of romance, and whether that can be romance, which I say it definitely can. The film is The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp, which is a 1943 film from Powell and Pressburger, which is kind of a romance and a bromance. It's about these two soldiers, one's British and one's German, and they kind of come across each other before the First World War. They're kind of friends, like, after the Boer War in South Africa. And then they come into conflicts when they have to literally fight each other during World War One. And then they kind of somewhat resettle their friendship. And then World War Two happens, and they're kind of drawn back together because the German guy is now living in Britain because he's, you know, renounced Nazism and that sort of thing. And in between all of that, they're kind of, they're in a love triangle with this woman that the British soldier fell in love with, but she ended up marrying the German guy. so it's, but ultimately it's kind of about these two guys and the, and their values that they represent and what they believe in and how they kind of change over their entire lives, and how that kind of tests their relationship. You kind of see the highs and lows of it. It's quite a long film. It's like 2.5 hours, nearly 3 hours maybe. But it is really terrific. I really like Powell and Pressburger films, so I've been watching them slowly over the last couple of years. I put this one off for ages because it is quite long, but it's probably my favourite now. It's really, it's just amazing, and it looks gorgeous as well. Really great film, in every respect. It's definitely, and it's got lots of elements of romance as well, so if that's what you're looking for, I definitely.
Nice.
Give it a watch. Next, I've got Before Sunrise.
Which this is a massive
film.
Hole in my, oh, my watching.
Never seen it.
Thing.
Oh wow! Oh,
and I heard about
so
it.
Good.
Before
I've
Sunset
never seen
as well,
it.
Right?
Yes. So
yeah,
there's
double.
Three. There's Before Sunrise, which is the first one, which is about these two like young backpackers. One of them's American, Ethan Hawke, and Julie Delpy, who's French, and they meet on a train, and then they spend one night in Vienna. And like the next morning, before he has to get on a plane back to America and she's getting on the train going elsewhere,
right.
And you kind of just watch them fall in love with each other, and they're kind of trying to figure out whether they can say it to each other or not. And it is like the most organic kind of romance I've ever seen unfold on screen before. There's this scene that I keep seeing like Instagram videos just coming up. It comes up so often, which is where they're sitting in a record store and they just put on a record, I'm not sure what it is, and they listen to it in silence without saying anything. And just the way that they're looking to each other as they're listening to the song is like you were saying earlier about like serenading, mm-hmm. but it's without any, either of them actually doing anything. They're just kind of sitting there listening to the same song, and you literally kind of see
like
them fall in love in the moment. It's pretty remarkable. It's really short as well. It's not even 90 minutes.
It's a good sign for me.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, so it's easy to watch, a really quick one. But it is, well, I won't spoil what happens, but there's two more films afterwards. So you see their relationship continues in some form or another afterwards. And finally, keeping on that, on the note of challenged relationships, is Past Lives, which is quite a recent one.
Yeah.
Came out in 2023.
I've not seen this.
Oh, this
is great.
This is so great. Oh, it makes me cry every time. Again, like La La Land, it's a similar vibe to that. It's about, it's kind of, ultimately, it's I sort of love Triangle as well.
Friends, yeah.
Yeah, it's about these two school friends who grew up in South Korea, and one of them moves to the US. No, to Canada, I think. Mm. Yes, to Canada first.
Yes.
And then later she moves to the US.
Yeah.
And so they lose touch. And then, like, 20 years after that, mm-hmm. they kind of reconnect over Skype. And they try and have a long-distance relationship. And then they lose touch again.
Mm.
And then years and years after that, he comes over to visit her in New York. But she's got a husband. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the majority of the film is playing out that scenario and just seeing them. And it's kind of their cross-cultural exchange because she feels like an American and he's kind of got his own culture and experience, which she finds very endearing, but also very different to everything she knows now. And the husband is in the middle of it, like, just profoundly confused by how much these two seem like they should be in love with each other and it should be, like, the perfect love story. But it's not actually necessarily what she wants, and it's just not the reality that they're living in.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's another one of those films that's kind of challenging this idea of having one love and the love that could have been and how we kind of romanticize that, but that's not necessarily because it's the thing we need in our lives. It's just it's a romantic idea that we think about. And yeah, there's this concept that the film talks about called Inyan, which is the idea that there's some people in your lives that in your life that you'll kind of walk past without even noticing. But in another life, they might have gone on to become your best friend or your lover or anything like that. I saw it with my friend Amy, who's a listener to podcasts, so shout out.
Hello, Amy. Thank you for listening, Amy.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Tell your friends, Amy.
She got a tattoo of Inyan because it was such a powerful film. And it's like her favourite film now, and we still talk about it all the time.
I will.
What's it called?
Netflix, I think. Yeah, it's
Past Lives.
Past Lives. I'm going to watch it this weekend.
So great. So great.
Right, lads. You've outdone yourselves. Some great, great lists of recommendations there. Good work. So, chaps, we always talk about what's coming up. And, of course, alongside stuff at the Odyssey, we've got the Oscars coming up very quickly. What are your thoughts on the Oscars next month, Nick?
A good variety of nominations, but I got some favourites. I got to say Anora was my favourite film of last year, and I think it deserves everything, especially Mikey Madison. It's probably one of the best debut performances that I've seen in a long time. And also a good shout out to Colman Domingo for being nominated for Best Actor for Sing Sing. It didn't really get much attention, but I did think it was one of my top films of last year also, just simply to the fact that the film was maybe like one or two Hollywood actors and then everyone was a reformed prisoner turned actor and performed in this film about that scheme, and they were really good as well. So yeah, my two favourites there, Anora, fingers crossed.
Yeah, good choices. Roberto, any thoughts?
Yeah, definitely agree with the Sing Sing nomination for Colman. Really enjoyed that film. For me, I'm a lot, and like you said, good variety in terms of like lots of films got nominated that I think usually wouldn't. For me, it is like I really want Coralie Fargeet to win Best Director for The Substance because I watched it again recently, and it is just insane how that film is so visually striking and bold and unlike any other film I've seen in the last 5 years. Just an absolutely fantastic, just a fantastic project, and what it's done in terms of like the conversation it starts is great, and it's all through her direction, I think personally, and the brilliant performances from Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley, but the direction.
But it's her vision. She wrote it.
Absolutely, yeah.
She wrote it as well.
Just completely original and unique, and yeah, just really, really gunning for that most of all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of said my top two as well, but I'd like to see win some awards for sure. I think, I don't know what's going to win Best Picture. I'd love it to be one of those two, but I have a feeling it might not be. But I think Anora or The Substance definitely for Best Screenplay, one of those two should. Best original screenplay, one of those two should definitely take it. Mm-hmm. And I think, Coralie to win for Best Director would be incredible. And she did win. Did she win the Golden Globe?
Demi Moore won Golden Globe for Best Actress. And she's nominated for Best Actress.
She is. That would be incredible as well. That would be very cool.
Be cool.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff. And we will, of course, be talking all about the Oscars in next month's Podyssey, the controversies, the winners, the losers, and everything in between. So, chaps, we've nearly run out of time, but just very quickly, have we got anything coming up at the Odyssey that you're particularly interested in talking about? Sam, do you want to go first?
Sure. So we've got September 5th coming up towards the end of the month, which is about the NBC news team covering the Munich Olympics in 1972.
I saw a trailer for this. It looks really good.
Yeah, it's a really great trailer. It's Peter Sarsgaard, who's kind of been like a sort of character actor for years and years, and this is kind of his first major starring role, at least that I'm aware of. And I think he's a really great actor, and the film looks terrific. We've got that on Wednesday the 26th and perhaps into March as well, and that's been up for a lot of awards buzz as well. It's been nominated for a few Oscars, I think, as well, so definitely worth coming to see that.
Nice. Roberto, anything you're particularly excited about?
I'll just like quickly shout out Real Pain again, which we've got showing throughout February and a bit of March as well, I believe. I'm really looking forward to Hard Truth, which we're playing a little towards the end.
Nick just did
February.
A kind of fist bump there. Yeah. Nick is also very
glad you brought it up.
A little towards the end of February and a bit in the early March as well. New film by Mike Leigh, who's like a pretty iconic British social realist director, kind of really manages to balance like the warmth and the grit of our British lives, I guess. But I'm really looking forward to that as well. It looks pretty good. And Nickel Boys as well, I want to shout that out. That looks really interesting as well, the 1960s kind of social period piece, all shot from first person perspective, I think. So look forward to those.
Very nice. Nick, anything from you?
Well, I have seen A Complete Unknown. I do recommend that. Selling pretty well already, but we do have a multiple screenings of that. Also nominated at the Oscars. Timothée Chalamet even is nominated for Best Actor there. And he does, actually, I think he's one of my favourite things of the film. I thought he puts in a very authentic performance of Bob Dylan, and does perform himself the songs. And he's a very good talent, and I believe it does deserve the success it is getting. So we've got a lot of that coming up, and I definitely do recommend that. I also want to, I was going to mention Hard Truths. Looking forward to that one. I've been mentioning that to everyone because we've got like one screening at the end of February, which is 25th, 7:30. And I think there's one more coming up in March. But if you keep coming, they'll keep showing them.
Yep. Good stuff. All right, chaps. Unbelievably, that's the end of, fittingly, I kept that coughing all the way through and there it goes. That's the end, the signal for the end. So I think we're going to say goodbye in as romantic a way as possible to our lovely listeners.
Oh, I didn't even think about this.
Who bravely wants to go first?
Oh, no.
Roberto, I think you, because you look so distraught with this.
I can't do.
Please don't get us taken off the air.
Least romantic, like in terms of like actually being able to express it. Okay.
Just tell our listeners you love them.
Okay. Everyone listens to the Podyssey. I love you guys so much.
Oh, beautiful.
Come to the Odyssey as well. Thank you.
Short but sweet and from the heart, Sam.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Come to the Odyssey, please and thank you.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna try and do like a Barry White sort of.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming to the Odyssey, listening to the Podyssey, and buy your tickets now.
Very good.
That was very.
Did nice somebody turn up the thermostat in here? That's amazing. Thank you, listeners. We love you. Thank you just for being you. You are incredible and we love you just the way you are. Thank you for listening to the Podyssey. Thanks, chaps.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at the Podyssey, you can email me at neil.roger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at the Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.